The first day it stopped raining, a dam upstream let out a bunch of overflow. So whilst we were filming in the woods, we came back and the river had gone up like literally 2 meters, was like raging.
It was white water.
Yeah. There was nowhere to get across. We had to do an emergency evacuation. Casting through the bush to a road, walk back to the cars. We couldn't go back to the cottage to shoot there for the rest of the shoot. One of our actors left on the back of that because they couldn't come back for reshoots.
I thought you were going to say they went raging down the river and you never saw them.
Yeah, we lost them. They're down somewhere underwater.
So the trauma in the actor's eyes is real.
Oh,
we know
why.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't difficult to tap into that.
Welcome to Bitch Talk. I'm your host, Erin, here with my co-host, Ange, aka Captain Party. And over the last 10 years, we've been elevating marginalized voices through interviews and events.
Sometimes over a glass of whiskey. If you're thirsty for more bitches, head over to bitchtalkpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram.
A big thank you to 48 Hills and our listeners for voting us Best of the Bay Best Podcast in 2022 and 2023.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to our South by Southwest 2024 festival coverage. Today you'll be hearing about narrative films that center around lies and finding out the truth. You will hear from the filmmaker from We Strangers and the lead actor, actress, and writer-directors from Bird Eater. Enjoy!
Welcome to South by Southwest. We are excited to talk with the director and screenwriter of the film We Strangers, Anu Valia. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really nice to meet you both over Zoom.
Same. Hopefully next time in person.
I'm really wanting to be in person all the time. That's all I want. I can't do the Zooms. Anyway, you're trying to tell me something. I'm sorry.
No, I want to get to your film. Our audience hasn't seen it yet. So can you introduce them to We Strangers?
Of course. So We Strangers is premiering at South by a competition. I'm so excited for people to see this movie. It really is. God, it's its own weird little thing. So essentially, the film is about this woman, Ray, who's played by Kirby Howell Baptiste. And she works as a cleaning woman. She works as a commercial cleaner in Gary, Indiana. And as she's working in this psychiatrist's office, cleaning his office, the psychiatrist, Dr. Patel, invites her to start cleaning his family's home. And she starts cleaning his home, then she starts cleaning his mistress's home. And as she starts working for this group of rich families across town, she tells this lie that she can speak to the dead, that she is psychic. And these families are all too eager to believe her. And she basically starts continuing to lie and to essentially manipulate them and control them and have power in these places that normally wouldn't ever give her power. And the film is really my exploration about assimilating and code switching and how the ability to be a chameleon is one that is like a superpower. It can be, but it also takes from you. And I just wanted to explore this idea of like, you know, to be able to read a room and change who you are, we understand that that can take from you, but it also can be quite powerful and it can feel quite good to gain power in spaces that normally don't want to give you power. It can feel really intoxicating, but then it does take from you. And I'm learning through the making of the movie, through the living of life, that true freedom is the ability to truly deeply be yourself. And that is not allowed for many, many people to really feel the weight of like feeling like you're an outsider or minority is not to really feel real freedom is not given to most people. Most people just need like food and shelter and to be cared and loved. But like that extra thing of being really deep in yourself is like such a privilege. And this is my exploration on that. And I really wanted to make a movie that's not like an issues movie that is only for the people who come to it. Like my attempt with the film and the tone of the movie, I'm trying to create the feeling of what it really feels like. So the tone of the film is this like very specific, like there's two kind of feelings in the movie, is like this feeling of like what's, I can't say like suspense and thriller because that's very genre, but it's like this kind of unsteady feeling of like what's going to happen. And I don't feel entirely comfortable. And that to me, I'm just trying to create the feeling of what it feels like to not be comfortable in other people. And that's my goal with the movie. So the tone is sort of this, like, it really is its own thing. Like I don't have like, it's not like movies that are out right now. Like it really is just this uneasy suspense. It's like with sprinkles of like dark comedy and like little sprinkles of like release of that tension is because I also have a comedy background. So there's some oddly funny moments in it. And it's very much like my sense of humor. And so that's what the film is about. And it's, I'm just so excited for people to experience it. And then tell me what they feel. Cause it's also like meant to create a dialogue. And because part of the filmmaking process is you have questions about the world, you make with people you care about, your other collaborators, you continue to ask and discover together. And then you discover more in the edit. And then you release it out into the world and you give it to other people. And then you ask, what did it make you feel? And so I'm excited to do the final part of the process, which is asking, is showing it to others and be like, and listening to what people feel about it.
Anu, you are already, you started talking about like the feeling of the film, and I was clenching the back of my teeth the entire time. And my gut was like, the whole time. The pacing is so wonderful. How did you manage to keep that feeling on set?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, because we're very, me and the actors, I think like we're all very joyful and there's so much love. Like everybody knew what the film they were making was. That's so interesting. That's a really good question because I think I was just, you know, the Coen brothers have said, or maybe this is an apocryphal story, but whatever, something that I've heard that I really took in, which was you are the director's only job is to be the arbiter of tone. That's all, you are taking this film. We did not shoot in order. We did not have that luxury. So, you know, you're breaking it up on set and you just have to make sure the tone, the pace and the tone, once you put it back in order, it will sustain what you think it's going to sustain. And we just broke it up every day. And I would try to just, that was my biggest thing on set, my biggest thought on set, because there's nobody else thinking about it. Our editor was not on set. He was in New York. And so we would talk on the phone, you know, he would be going through dailies and stuff, but it was always just like, there's a scene, well, I don't want to give things away. Not that I think it's even a movie you could give away, but the point of the film is you're not supposed to really know what's going to happen. So, cause she doesn't. And I am trying to answer your question. Essentially, I would just be very aware of like, are we sustaining this level of like uncertainty and unease when Ray is in like the white family's spaces. You aren't really sure. You're just kind of hoping that you do. But on set, you know, you're just also talking and laughing. And I try to like allow for the actors to play in a sandbox and just try to rein things in if I feel like tonally maybe it's not in the right space. But they also knew the film they were in. So that was really helpful.
Yeah, like you said, this film has a lot to do with race and class. And as the writer of the screenplay as well, every year, especially in this country, these terms are shifting and evolving. So I'm curious to know how, through the years, did the story change? Did you add, did you take away? And also in directing your own work, does that give you added pressure because you're so attached to it?
Well, yeah, I mean, like race is so important in the movie and how people connect by othering is also interesting to me. And so I was like, Ray is Black. She's brought into this white family by an Indian man who I think, and all this stuff is subconscious, right? It's like, this person is like a brown man bringing me into this white space, it's probably not gonna be that bad or weird. I'm sure I'll be fine, you know? And then like, it's just slightly uncomfortable. Cause like, to me, what I've noticed so much, especially as like an Indian woman growing up in Indiana, which I grew up in Northwest Indiana, that's still like at the time, it's actually a lot less so now, which is really nice to see. You know, we were like 30 miles outside of Chicago, and it's still, it was somewhat racially segregated where I grew up. And I just noticed this, like the subtleties of I was going to say like racial discrimination, but it's more specific than that. Just like the ways people would interact with each other was so interesting to me. And I was like, you can't, you watch people like be so careful with how they're speaking. And it was just so fascinating to me. And one thing I'm really interested in is like, there's a scene with one of the white men speaking to Ray, and he sees her as an other, but he also wants to connect with her. He's like a nice guy. Like it's like nobody's trying to hurt other people's feelings. It's just like everyone's limited by their own personal experience and their own worldview. And the way he's trying to connect with her, someone he also sees as an other, is to other his like old Indian boss. And I just thought that was so fat. And then Ray is like deeply uncomfortable because she's like, I know what's going on. Like Ray is also a master at reading people because she's been forced to her whole life. And she's just like, I'm not going to create waves. And I don't want to like analyze one scene too much because I think that's even, I want to allow people to just feel it. Because again, I think I'm not trying to say something. I'm just an observer. And I'm just trying to like observe how I think people are with each other and like present that, because I know when people are trying to tell me what to feel, I'm like, well, I already kind of know what I feel. I just want to like observe. And then actually my feelings shift based on what I see and experience, as opposed to being told to change how I feel. And so I don't know if I answered your question, but that is, race is both so important to the film, and it's also not, it's supposed to also just be kind of playing in the background, because it's not actively on the tip of everyone's tongue. I think that's too one note. That's not how people are actually moving through the world. And wait, you had a second question.
Just having written the screenplay and now you're directing your own work, if that adds a pressure because you're so attached to it, or is there an added confidence because you know what you want from it?
I'm definitely not so attached to it, because I really, the material shows you what it needs to be. You put the scene on its feet and it either works or it doesn't. And I find that really comforting, because it's really not about me. It's like, I conceived of this, but now I'm working with a bunch of other people and you're watching a scene play out, and it's either like really awesome, and then you find out in the edit it doesn't work, or it's like really not working and you're like, okay, I can't pretend it is. And I think I would say it's more like there's story we all as a group, like I think when I say we, I mean the actors, the department heads, the crew, and then in post the editor, sound designer, composer, we're all trying to create something that is creating a feeling. I am just one part of it, and I'm just like maybe like the top arbiter of it, that's just kind of like, oh no, it needs to shift this way, this, it's basically to my taste. I have to like listen to my taste as like the leader, but it's not all me. It's like everyone else is bringing themselves and their experience to it, and I'm just the person that's making it not muddy, I guess, hopefully. And but in terms of pressure, it's more it's finally, you know, when you write and direct something, you're expressing yourself. And it's so such a relief to finally express myself. It's been so long. I've made short films, and then I'm also a television director, and I direct other people's writing. And that's really beautiful in its own way. I get to find myself in other people's words. But I finally, for the first time in my life, I get to express myself through my stuff. And that's really a genuine relief. Like I felt I was experiencing Ray's story, which is like just getting to express. And some people will like it, and some people won't be on the wave, and that's okay too. And I want to hear why. And but one thing I did notice, which was really interesting, is like as a television director, I'm on set with other people's words, and there's a writer on set, and I'm trying to enact someone, I'm trying to realize someone else's vision. So when a scene wasn't working, there'd be like a team of writers that could like rewrite, and like. And I could just then go off and be with the actors and try to make, like, work with the actors only, like, as a divide and conquer. But I didn't have that on this film, of course, because I'm the writer and the director. So it was something that I didn't anticipate, was navigating the scenes as a writer. Because sometimes I'd want to rewrite the scene and it didn't need it. I just needed to be only the director and trust the writer I was. But sometimes I would have to rewrite on the spot. And that I'm not practiced at that. And there were times I have to rewrite like a line, or like, you know, the button of this isn't working, I have to rewrite it. And I'm not practiced on that pressure. I'm like practiced on like consolidating coverage or like doing things you have to do last minute, but that was very new to me. And I was like, oh, this is hard. Like thinking of like a great line on the spot is like really hard, you know? And so that was fascinating. That was like definitely a learning curve, but you just have to do it more to get better at it, I guess.
I did want to touch on, I love when music is really prominent in films, and I loved going the back and the forth of the hip hop, like now hip hop, and then like 60s soul. Can you talk about those choices and who your music supervisor was, and were you involved in all of those? Oh, I know, I'm a music nerd, Ange knows. Yes.
I was waiting for the music. I knew she was going to ask the music question. So. Obviously.
Kat Matt is our music supervisor, and she is going to be so excited by this. Music is so we have two musical elements, which is the composed music, the score of the film, which was composed by Jay Wadley, and then the music, the diegetic source music in the movie, which is so important because the music tells you who these people are, what they listen to. And so like Ray is listening to current hip hop, like also some songs by local Gary artists that I'm really excited about. Like a lot of like, she's listening to like, you learn who she is by the stuff she likes. You learn things about people by the things they like, and then she learns about other people in the house by the things that she cleans, by their objects. And then you have this other character that's listening to, there's this other character who is the daughter of one of the families. And she listens to like a more contemporary hip hop artist that has crossed over, like a Black artist who has crossed over, not crossed over, that's not the right word at all, actually. It's that she has, white people have accepted her. And so she's listening to her, like this other artist. And that's just, again, just interesting. There's no value judgment to that. That's just like, oh, that's interesting. And then then there's a party with all of like the older white people, and they're listening to like 80s rock music that was very popular when they were kids. And then Ray and Mari, her best friend, Ray's mother, Willie, like any scenes that are kind of tied to like Ray's home life, or she's listening to sometimes music that her mom used to listen to. So like her and her best friend will listen to music that their mom used to listen to, which is more 60s like soul, Motown, because also the film takes place in Northwest Indiana. There's a lot of Motown influence. So like what people listen to, and like, and then when she's on the, when Ray is driving around, she's listening to Dr. J's blues radio station, which Dr. J, Larry Jenkins, is the prime minister of the blues. He has his own radio station in Gary, and he's unbelievable. The music he plays is so great. So he is also our like shepherd of that music that is a very real radio station. But obviously like we picked our own music and all that. So it's to me, what music is it allows you a little bit more of an insight into like the era, like where these people are in life. And like music is so, it's such an easy way to understand like what a person's taste is, and also then a little bit of where your upbringing is, who the people you're surrounded by are. So that was super important, very fun to kind of design every character's music taste. Was a real laugh. It was very funny. I I'm not a big 80s hair metal, and I was a little like, sometimes I make a couple of these thoughts a little grating, but it was like fun to be like, okay. And then it was fun to like live in those worlds. It's a real delight.
Well, thank you so much, Anu. We definitely need to have you back because there's so much more to talk about. But
there's so much more.
Yeah. Until then, congratulations on We Strangers, again, premiering at South by Southwest. We'll see you again for your next project.
Thank you so much for taking the time to watch. And I can't wait to hear what people think about it.
All right, Bitch Talkers, you're in for a treat. We're coming from South by Southwest 2024. We're talking to the two lead actors and the directors of Bird Eater. I'm going to have y'all introduce yourselves since we have a big group here. I'm going to start with...
Hi, I'm Jack Clark. I'm the writer and co-director, Bird Eater.
I'm Jim Weir, co-director.
I'm Shabana Aziz. I'm an actor.
And I'm Mackenzie Fernley, also an actor.
And I'm going to let Jack tell our audience what Bird Eater is about.
Now, Bird Eater is about a really awful bachelor party in the outback, where maybe you can do it actually.
So the groom invites his own fiancée to the Bucks party with the boys on this rural property in the outback, and some secrets come out about their relationship, and the night takes a really, really feral turn.
Yeah, to put it mildly. So we love talking to independent filmmakers and the struggle that it takes to make these films and put them out there. But your shoot faced extraordinary struggles to get out there. So before you even started filming, we had COVID issues, environmental issues, and you had to recast and you had to reshoot. Can you just kind of tap into the struggles you had even just to get this film made?
Yeah, well, Jack and I found this great property that we wanted to shoot essentially the whole movie at, which you had to cross a stream by foot to get to the property.
A small
stream. And it didn't really register to us as a big issue, but when we started filming, it was the start of La Nina, that weather event where it just didn't stop raining for weeks and weeks and weeks. So as we were shooting... this stream turned into like a raging river over the course of about 2 weeks, and we managed it for a while. We got like gumboots for everyone, and we got waders for everyone. We built a ferry out of a gate on the property and some stand-up paddle boards.
Wow.
So we were like literally ferrying like cast and gear across.
Yeah, camera gear, people.
Yeah,
this could have been the side film.
Yeah.
This should be in like behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, the thing is we couldn't afford to have behind the scenes like
very few photos of it.
Yeah, there's like not that much record of it. The first day it stopped raining, a dam upstream let out a bunch of overflow. So whilst we were filming in the woods, we came back and the river had gone up like literally 2 meters, was like raging.
It was white water, yeah.
Yeah, there was no way to get across. We had to do an emergency evacuation. Casting through the bush to a road, walk back to the cars. We couldn't go back to the cottage to shoot there for the rest of the shoot. One of our actors left on the back of that because they couldn't come back for reshoots.
I thought you were going to say they went raging down the river and you never saw them.
Yeah, we lost them. They're down somewhere underwater.
So the trauma in the actor's eyes is real. We know why.
No, it wasn't difficult to tap into that. It was fairly
it's
traumatic.
Funny now.
We can laugh now, yeah.
Spatially, it was quite a challenge because we ended up picking a new location for the second block. So the eventual geography of the space was a combination of a bunch of different locations that we had to kind of map in camera, but oftentimes we were doing scenes in the second block that people weren't realizing were already half shot, and sort of we were combining rooms from the old house with the new house, and it ended up being pretty seamless actually because a lot of it's quite mid or quite close, so it's easy to sort of blend things, but it was a real sort of puzzle. Yeah.
And now you're here at South by Southwest.
Now we're here.
Congratulations. Yeah, eventually got here. Yeah. Thank you.
So this is a film really from a woman's perspective, I feel, when I watched it, but here we are with two men that wrote it. Can you talk about the evolution of the script and the story?
Well, I'd say to begin with, we started with a very focused like couple story, so it didn't have the bachelor party dressings, it didn't have that sort of arena around it, and we started with a couple and we wanted to have a really interesting look at codependency in couples that we hadn't seen before, but we had sort of seen in our immediate friend circles. And then we were sort of designing a scenario in which a couple would naturally separate, or where a social expectation would be that they'd uncouple for at least a night, and that seemed to us a Bucks party or a bachelor night. And then it took on a whole new aura because it had that sort of gender dynamic, it had that sort of weighted male presence. And then it became very much a story to us about male friendships being observed or male friendships with an audience attached and exactly how conversations between men occur when people are watching or even if there's just a camera. Because the idea was sort of you bring an audience to something like a box party where there is this ritualized aspect to it, or there's sort of this, there's shared secrets, or there's a shared sense of we're all kind of doing the wrong thing, but because it's a communal activity, we can sort of excuse ourselves. And then bringing new people to that scenario and then having a camera there, it sort of feels like there's two audiences to the behavior. So yeah, it was mostly about, for us, it takes a while, I think, to really know what a film is about as well. We sort of had multiple iterations of what we thought the film was really about, but it was only sort of right towards the end of like post and editing it all together that we realized it did feel to us about conversations men have with each other, and sort of we are saying that we want this not necessarily to have any answers for old conversations, but hopefully to start new conversations, to start new questions, and we sort of like putting that to an audience as well. Yeah,
it does get real complicated. I want to turn to our actors here. You play our lead couple, whose relationship is a lot more complicated and toxic than it first seems. So how did you create this trust with each other to film really difficult scenes? And also for Mackenzie, if you can talk about, you have to play sort of a victim and an abuser and find that fine line.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing about these abusers, is that they would never think or would dare to think that they actually are the abuser. I think the way that they justify their behavior is always to be the victim. Playing someone like that is, fairly unpleasant, because you're aware as the actor of the thing that you're doing, but when you're playing that character, you have to feel justified or vilified in your actions. In terms of working together, we had, I suppose, because as you mentioned before, a lot of complications in pre-production.
Trauma bonding.
And we also had a lot of time, although we were in separate states in Australia, we did, because things kind of getting pushed back, we did have a fair bit of time to talk about the relationship and to, I suppose, come up with a plan how we were going to hit the ground running. I think that was really helpful.
Yeah, and with the, like, I mean, difficult scenes, if you mean like the intimacy and stuff, and we had an amazing intimacy coordinator who did so much work. And I do wonder about what your process was with working with her, because as the directors, because I think when I got the script, there wasn't any intimacy in it, and then we had a meeting with the intimacy coordinator, and then she learned all our boundaries, and then you sent a script that was relevant to our.
Yeah.
Which was so cool, because that never happens. That was kind of a sick process, actually. That really helped.
Michaela Caratini is her name. We had a lot of chats about intent, what me and Jack were intending. And then she just asked us a lot of questions, give us different ideas. She was really involved creatively. Me and Jack had what turned out to be the wrong idea about intimacy coordinators, that they kind of try and neuter the work you want to do, make it like less and less intimate kind of thing. But she was almost the opposite. She was like, well, if this is your intent, then like maybe this would work or this would work. And she gave us a lot of ideas. Super, super valuable member of the team.
And she's a writer as well. So she was able to sort of workshop ideas with us on the fly, and it was really collaborative.
Yeah, and she's also a choreographer. So she did the dance choreography for the dancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She wasn't that performer, but she did the choreography, and because of the like pressured timeline, we didn't even see that performance until the day of, until we were in a field in the middle of winter.
Right. And they just kind of, were busy building rafts and you were doing massage,
sailing the seven seas. Yeah.
I'll start with the actors, but maybe it's a conversation for the whole table. But how do you actually process this kind of storyline with each other? It's so serious. It's also a little scary and creepy at times. Like when you come off of the set, Do you two talk about what that was, how you felt? Is there a therapist on site?
I think we were all each other's therapists by the end of it. I suppose, obviously, when you're working, when you're there on set, you do have to approach it with as much respect as it deserves. And with a story like this, I think, obviously, it does deserve a lot of respect. But I think you also need a fair bit of levity after you're done to kind of pull yourself out of that. I think that was really helpful to have everyone around to be able to, you know, put tools down and then just go, okay, let's try and relax until we have to go do this again tomorrow, and try and rely on each other to kind of keep ourselves out of that when we weren't there on set.
Yeah. Also, I feel like having pre and like Jack and Jim made us like homework PDFs with like reading lists and watch like things to watch
homework,
and like questions
yeah.
to answer. It was like proper homework, and that was really helpful and really cute, because I think then we went into it knowing exactly what we were intending to do and exactly what the parameters would be in terms of the story and the difficult themes, and so that was really great, because then you kind of knew where you were going, so you knew how to come out. But sometimes I feel like with subject matter like this, it might feel like you're just hurling yourself off a cliff and then going, hopefully it's okay. But it wasn't like that, because we did homework.
Yes, I'd say most of our difficult conversations were in pre-production, and then by the time we're on set, you kind of want to be talking to the actors as little as you have to and let them do their
they
own
really
thing,
because they will have to as well.
Right.
Yeah.
We're actually just meeting.
Yeah. yeah.
But yeah, what Mackenzie is talking about with levity as well became super important for Mackenzie, without getting into it too much, but like depicting abusive behavior or depicting an abuser. Using levity in film as well, or just even talking about the performance, like the idea of building villainy, but also sort of seeding levity into that, I think sort of it creates chinks in the armor with characters, and it sort of, like I always think about it, if you see this person who has all of these machinations, I think seeing them kind of stumble over their words or seeing them make an error that is just like unintelligent, and an audience can see that, it does sort of break down this facade of or being unapproachable or being intimidating, and a lot of abusers are like this as well. So it's sort of about depicting abusive behavior in a way that's really approachable for an audience.
Speaking of unintelligent, I want to talk about this horrible game you taught me called Paranoia. Is this in Australian? Is this popular in Australia? And is there ever a good time to play this game?
Yeah.
It just causes fights.
I've played it with my friends.
You have. It's popular in Australia.
It's fairly popular, yeah.
Yeah, for those listening who don't know the rules of Paranoia.
Let's play right now.
Yeah.
You guys have this podcast.
You whisper a question in someone's ear to your like right, where the answer is going to be someone in the room, so it'll be like most likely to cheat on their girlfriend. You just whisper this secret question, and then the person will answer, oh, that's got to be Mac. It's Mackenzie.
I would have guessed him too.
So Mackenzie knows he's the answer to the question, but he doesn't know what the question is. And then you flip a coin. If it's heads, everyone gets to hear the question. Mackenzie gets to know the question he's the answer to. But if it's tails, no one gets to hear the question. So Mac knows he's the answer to a question, doesn't know what the question is, and that's why they call it Paranoia.
This is not good at all.
It's a bad game. It's a bad game.
Wouldn't recommend
yeah.
it. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so mean.
It's
yeah.
super
exactly.
mean.
That's the idea. Yeah.
Aussies, man.
Yeah.
That's
mean
why
bunch.
They're so tough.
Mean bunch. Yeah.
But it's, yeah. As soon as you have, there's more than one of you in the game as well, as soon as you have a partner, that makes you so much more vulnerable, because the idea is kind of that you want their partner to answer them for a question.
Oh, you want something juicy.
That's kind of the idea. You're trying to get in between them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe for your wedding anniversary.
No. Okay. Well, we really enjoyed this film. It's called Bird Eater. We've been speaking with Jim and Jack and Shabana and Mackenzie. So thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
You very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
You did it.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. You can find more information about this episode in our show notes.
If you're missing us, you can visit us at bitchtalkpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter and buy us a cup of coffee.
Did you know we're also on the radio? You can find us at bff.fm.
And lastly, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. All the cool bitches are doing it.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.